want to bring a lesson. We'll spend a lot of our time in the Proverbs looking at the subject of anger and also self-control, and I hope that it'll be beneficial to us. I read a couple of weeks ago, maybe some of you saw or read in the Courier Journal, probably 2 weeks ago, I think it was a religious column of some sort, but they gave an illustration. It was about a woman who was mad at her husband. In fact, she was very angry with her husband. She was, you might even say, bitter with her husband. And she was angry and went for a walk on the beach and found a bottle. And, of course, wiping off the bottle, the genie pops out. And the genie pops out and gives her the proverbial three wishes. So she is so angry that all she can think about is getting even with her husband. And so the genie kind of picks up on this as she's struggling with what to ask for. And so he calls, but he invokes a special law among genies. And that is, seeing that she was angry, he says to her that whatever she wishes, the recipient of her anger would receive a double portion. Well, she didn't hear any of that. So she immediately says, I want $1 million in my bank account. That was wish number one. Wish number two, she followed up rather quickly. She wanted her favorite car. She says, I want a Ferrari. And then it dawned on her what the genie had said. The genie had said, now whoever's the recipient of your anger is going to get a double portion. So she realized all of a sudden that her husband had $2 million in his bank account, and he had two Ferraris. Well, how do you think that made her feel? Now she's furious. So she thought and she thought, and here's what she came up with. She said, Genie, I want you to take the bottle that you came out of, and I want you to beat me half to death. That may be a little bit humorous. Anger is a very serious subject, and bitterness and anger can become so entrenched in a person's life that that's all they can see. And obviously, in this little illustration, this wife was so angry and bitter with her husband that she just wasn't even thinking clearly at all. So, there is a danger to anger that's left uncontrolled. And many people need to know the biblical teaching about anger. And it's our responsibility to live in such a way that we exemplify that type of person as a Christian that learns how to control their anger. But there's a lot of people that they just don't heed the Bible teaching when it comes to anger. And so what happens? They spend so much of their time and so much of their days on earth in anger, which leads to bitterness, which leads to just really a miserable life. Well, I got to wondering about what exactly happens, because they've done medical studies on any and everything. So I got to wondering what kind of effects anger has on the body. In other words, when you get angry, what happens within the body? And I found this interesting chart that I'd like to share with you. And I know you can't read that, and I'm going to try to look at some of it. And some of this is obviously terms that I would butcher, so I'm not going to try to butcher a lot of medical terms. What I want to say is that when anger begins to arise in you, things begin to happen within your mind. And so the first thing is that this section of the brain, and I'll look at some of this in just a moment, but this part of the brain begins to activate, and then in turn it activates this part of the brain, which in turn activates, and I'll say this word because I know it, pituitary gland. And the pituitary gland then activates the adrenal glands, and then that releases stress hormones. And, of course, we think of, so when you get angry, your body begins to react. Well, here's what I wanted you to see. So this shows that elevated, one of the hormones that is elevated is cortisol, which causes neurons to accept too much calcium through their membrane. A calcium overload can make cells fire too frequently and die. This is what it's saying is happening when you become angry. And then this part of the brain, it says the prefrontal cortex are particularly vulnerable to cortisol and these negative effects. I want to look at this section right here. Elevated cortisol kills neurons in the hippocampus, I think is how that is. and disrupts the creation of new ones. Suppressed activity in this area weakens short-term memory. It also prevents you from forming new memories properly. This is why you might not remember what you want to say in an argument. And so this is all things that's starting to take place in your brain because it's been activated and it ultimately releases stress hormones. Well, let me flip to another part of the chart. And this is how stress hormones affect your body. This is on the same chart. And again, it's trying to show what happens. Look what happens when we get angry. And this is all things that would make sense. Your heart rate's going to go up. Your blood pressure is going to increase. There is arterial tension. Blood glucose levels go up. Did you know that, Lisa? Do you know that? Because blood glucose level goes up? You do, because I make you mad. I'm sorry. Blood fatty and acid level goes up. Anyway, I just want you to see your thyroid function goes down. And all of this is happening because you are angry. And so while there are these triggers, the body reacts. Now, this is a God-given emotion. This is something that God has given to us. And we'll talk about that more in just a moment. But who here hasn't had to deal with this emotion? Anger. There's not anybody here that can raise their hand and say, I don't know what this emotion is because I've never experienced it. Because if you do that, let's default back to this morning's lesson about lying. And then I'll just talk to your spouse and we'll find out the truth, right? So we all understand this emotion is a real emotion. And here's what I want you to do. We're going to spend a lot of time in Proverbs, but I want you to go over with me to Ephesians chapter 4 to begin with. Ephesians chapter 4, it's a familiar passage. The Apostle Paul writes to the church at Ephesus, and he says in verse 26, he says, be angry and do not sin. So the first part says, be angry. You can be angry. In fact, Ken Chapman gave a sermon on Thursday night, and one of the things he said is the way that the world is wicked, he said, get angry about it. Get angry about it. And he showed how God gets angry with wickedness. And he said, even come to tears. We looked at the lamenting of Jeremiah for several weeks. And so, you know, it is an emotion that he says, be angry, but then it's qualified. And he says, do not sin. And do not sin. Do not let the sun go down upon your wrath. And so we can be angry, but he says it's got to be controlled and it can't be something that just continues and continues on in our life. I also want you to look over at James chapter 1 and verse 20. James chapter 1 in verse 19, we're familiar with what he says there. He says, my beloved brethren, let every man be swift to hear, slow to speak, and slow to wrath. Why do you need to be slow to wrath, James? Look at verse 20. For the wrath of man does not produce the righteousness of God. When you get angry, it does not end up producing righteous things. When it is out of control. All of us probably have a defining moment in their mind. I know I do. I can go back in my mind and I can realize that I got angry to the point that it was sinful. And there's been more than one, but there's one that really sticks out in my mind. And so we think about how did that produce, that wrath, did that produce righteousness? The righteousness of God. And the answer to that question is no, it didn't. How can it? In fact, the way this is written in this verse is wrath cannot produce. Another way to say that, it's impossible for it to produce righteous things. And so when we're talking about being angry but not sinning. And so we can reach the point where we have not controlled that and we have gone too far and we have, in fact, sinned. And so I want to talk about wrath and I want to look at the Proverbs to do this. Now, wrath is, when we define that, it is hot with anger. It is our word that says he or she is furious, right? When we say the word furious, we don't think that they're a little bit angered or something. Furious means they're really hot about this. They are upset about this. This emotion is something that is another word that's used to define wrath is heat. Heat. One of the dictionaries, biblical dictionaries, defines it as hot displeasure. Hot displeasure. And so we see from that this idea of heat, fury, and it's an emotion that all of us have. It's God-given. It's something that you may not intend to get angry, but all of a sudden you start, what do we say? You start feeling a little hot under the collar, and your blood pressure starts going up, and now you're getting more and more angry, and the body's beginning to react. All right? So just bear that in mind. Well, let's look at some passages. In Proverbs chapter 14 and in verse 29, and I have a lot of these up on the screen for sake of time, but if you would, go ahead and turn to some of these. Some of you will turn. I'll try to not move so quickly through this that you cannot turn. But in Proverbs chapter 14 and verse 29, he says, "He who is slow to wrath has great understanding, but he who is impulsive exalts folly." You see, what I want you to see here is that wrath is something that leads to folly or foolishness. And that control of your wrath, you either have control of it, or did you notice another word, at least in the King James rendering there? It's this word right here. Impulsive. We understand what that is, right? It's when it's this reaction. It's like, you know, just that quick. You know, something has angered me. So I either control my wrath or I have this impulse, this very quick-tempered, we would say. And so wrath, as he says, what that exalts is folly. Look at Proverbs chapter 12 and verse 16. Proverbs chapter 12 and in verse 16. Here he says, "A fool's wrath is known at once, but a prudent man covers shame." Again, lack of control of one's anger, and it boils over immediately. And all of us understand that. It can happen quickly, and it can rise very quickly. And what happens? Do you remember what happens is, now I don't even know what I was trying to say in my anger, because I'm hot. I'm furious. I'm out of control. In Proverbs chapter 27 and in verse 3, look at this proverb. And it has, the wisdom literature here has a lot to say about this emotion. He says, "A stone is heavy and sand is weighty, but a fool's wrath is heavier than both of them." So wrath keeps company with the fool. You know, you picture trying to carry a big stone, maybe a bag of concrete. Chad, can a bag of sand be pretty heavy? Absolutely it can. Doesn't take much for it to be a lot of pounds in a small bag. And so he says, but don't even think about that. He says, a fool's wrath is heavier than both of those. And so we have to be careful, and we need to think about the reality of wrath. Another thing that I noticed is in Proverbs chapter 19 and verse 19. Proverbs 19 and in verse 19. He says, "A man of great wrath will suffer punishment, for if you rescue him, you will have to do it again." Now, that, words that are spoken in anger, wrath, he says those are unfit words. Those are words that, excuse me, I jumped to the next section. This one, he's talking about wrath is, in the way I've put it, is repetitive. What do we call a person who gets angry often? A hothead, right? And we say they're quick-tempered. I mentioned that one already. Or, and the thing is that we can't just excuse that. I say that often. Members of the church cannot just excuse this as a family trait or a hereditary, because God expects us to control our anger and not sin. Be angry, but do not sin. Bring it under our control. But a person who is angered often, did you catch what he said? This reminds me of what the Proverbs talks about a man who is drunk. It says, it goes through the whole stage of how he's stupored and so forth. And one of the very last things that it says is that he will get up in the morning, and what will he do? He'll seek it again. Some of us probably have family members that their wrath, they have no control of their anger. And what do you have to do? You have to rescue them over and over and over and over again. And that's what the proverb writer says. And that's why I called it, great wrath is repetitive. You just keep doing it and keep doing it. It gets you into trouble. And we need to learn how to control that. Wrath, and this is, I'm sorry I jumped to some of my notes here, but look at Proverbs 27 and verse 4. He says, wrath is cruel and anger a torrent, but who is able to stand before jealousy? Now, listen, the lesson is not on jealousy, but I want you to stop and I want you to think about how bad jealousy is. We're going to talk about anger and wrath, but just think about what he's saying about how bad jealousy is in regards to that passage. Now, with regards to what we want to talk about, he says wrath is cruel. Well, when we say words in our anger and wrath, are they fit words? Is usually what comes out of our mouth something good and sweet? No. What it is unfit means they're words that should not be spoken. They should not be spoken. And we'll note here also that he says anger is a torrent. And a torrent is overflowing. It's like an uncontrolled stream. It's like what happens when it rains really hard and they can't open the dam gateways open enough. What happens? It busts. It's, you know, I can't imagine what it was like around here before they dammed up the river. Because at certain times, it would have for sure gone wherever it wanted to go. Man would not have controlled it. And so he says that that's what anger is. He says, anger, a torrent, overflowing like an uncontrolled stream. Well, wrath is cruel. And so in anger, we say things that are hurtful. We say things that we should not say. And again, we just need to recognize that we can be very cruel when we are angry. Another thing about anger is we find in the book of Proverbs is, look at Proverbs 15 and verse 18. Proverbs 15 and verse 18. A wrathful man stirs up strife, but he who is slow to anger allays contention. So, again, what does wrath do? It stirs up strife. Well, think about the definition of that. You remember furious or heat or hot displeasure. So when you've got someone that's hot, what are they doing? They're generating some friction, right? And that's exactly what this picture is. This is a picture of someone that because of their wrath, their anger, they're just constantly rubbing and stirring up, right? They cause strife. They stir up quarrels. They cause disagreements. There is uncontrolled debates. That's what the person of wrath and anger does. Now, how many congregations do you think have been destroyed because of anger? Because somebody is angry. Some man, let's say, and he's just upset with everybody because he didn't get picked to do this and he didn't get to do that, or something, somehow he thought he was somebody nobody else saw him to be, and he just is so angry that what does he do? He begins to generate some strife over here, and the next thing you know, the whole thing is blown up. You don't think that that has happened over and over and over and over again in the Lord's church? Shame on us. What we need to recognize is that righteousness is not produced from this type of behavior, this emotion, that is not controlled. It prevents a person from using their best judgment. James says again, it does not produce righteous acts. It just doesn't, period. Now I want you to look at this passage with me, if you would. Look at Proverbs chapter 30 and verse 33. Proverbs chapter 30 and in verse 33. For as the churning of milk produces butter, and wringing the nose produces blood, so the forcing of wrath produces strife. Now the kids here probably have no idea what in the world it means to churn butter. If you say, how do you get butter? They say you go to the refrigerator at the grocery store and pick up butter. But how did they used to have to make butter? You took the cream off the milk, you'd stick it in a jar, you'd sit there and maybe crank, at least us, had the little paddles, and you just crank that bugger until it would begin to turn into butter, and I'm not sure what all you have to add to it, but this is the idea. Now, that's how you produce butter, churning. Or what happens if you're constantly wiping and agitating your nose, wringing it? He says you're going to produce blood. Or you are forcing wrath. What are you going to produce? He says you're going to produce strife. You know, an interesting thing here is, is it the ESV? Chad, look at that, if you would. Proverbs, someone told me that I think it's the ESV. This word is actually the same Hebrew word, and yours actually translates it the same word all three times, doesn't it? And it says pressing every time, right? Well, that's the way that is. It's actually the same Hebrew word, but it's translated churning, wringing, and forcing. Use three different words there to help us understand. Well, it doesn't take much for us to recognize that, that's what happens when we agitate. It's the story that I've told you probably more than once, that when I was really trying to agitate my older brother, Alan. I mean, I was trying to get him. I was trying to get him to come out there and get mad at me and chase me around the yard. And which would happen upon occasion. On this occasion, he looked at me and he says, no, I'm not doing it. And he went back to doing what he was doing. And it took the sting out of it. But it's this agitating. It's this churning. It's this forcing. And so we need to recognize that. It's not good to irritate others. It's not good for us to force somebody to get angry. Isn't that what he's talking about in Ephesians chapter 6 and verse 4? Those of us who are parents, think about what Paul is saying in chapter 6 and verse 4. You're familiar with this. He says, fathers, do not provoke your children to wrath, but bring them up in the training and admonition of the Lord. Do not force wrath upon your children. And do you want to know why? Well, look at its counterpart over in Colossians chapter 3 and verse 21. Colossians 3 and verse 21. Fathers, do not provoke your children, lest they become discouraged, you see. And so when we force wrath and force anger as fathers, we can cause problems in our children's lives. They can become discouraged. Now, let's look at a few verses here and some profitable teaching with regards to how do we learn to deal with this emotion. It's a real emotion, but it's an emotion that we must deal with. In Proverbs chapter 15 and in verse 1, and I don't have these up here, so you'll need to turn with me. Proverbs chapter 15 and in verse 1. You're familiar with this passage, I'm sure. A soft answer turns away wrath, but a harsh word stirs up what? Anger. Well, you know, in the heat of the moment, it's hard to think quick enough and have control enough to have a soft answer. But if we can learn to do this and do this well, then we can diffuse the wrath of the other person. That may be easier said than done, but when we fire back, Lisa, when you and I get into an argument, does it ever help when I get angry back and you go, it never escalates to anything good. It just ends up creating more and more unfit words, words that should not be spoken. It generates this friction. It causes contention in the home. It causes strife. And so as we think about this, and the wisdom that it takes to be able to have a soft answer, to be able to turn away wrath. And yet this is good teaching. It's something that I do not have and have not going to develop this here. Maybe that would be something to do at another time. But that's something that you can think on about how do I go about carrying out this instruction. Again, this is the wisdom literature in the Bible. Proverbs chapter 21, of course, I'm not saying it's the only, but it's a section of a lot of wise sayings. In Proverbs chapter 21 and verse 14, a gift in secret pacifies anger, and a bribe behind the back strong wrath. A gift? Well, what does a husband do when he's at odds with his wife? What does he end up doing? Brings her a gift, right? Brings her flowers, those types of things. Well, again, there's instruction here. A gift in secret pacifies anger, and a bribe behind the back, strong wrath. How about Proverbs 29? Excuse me, let me get back to that. Proverbs 29 and verse 8. Proverbs 29 and in verse 8. Scoffers set a city aflame, but wise men turn away wrath. So wisdom would say, this has got to be shut down, and I have to figure out how to do that. And the wise are always trying to make sure that there is peace. In Proverbs 19 and verse 11, Proverbs 19 and verse 11. Now that's hard, of course, when your enemy is pushing, generating friction, trying to stir up a lot of things. Across from my in-laws in Michigan, just a half a mile down the road from our house, was Arnold Metz. And Arnold Metz was the farmer that was so angry and bitter that he died that way. He was just mean. He was just angry. He was just contentious. I don't know that I ever had a conversation with him that it didn't start with some kind of scolding of some sort. I remember one time my father-in-law's dog, I think it had a seizure or something, and he came over to point it out, and he's scolding me as if I had something to do with it, and then proceeded to explain how and why he thought the dog had had... He didn't know what was going on with the dog. He was just mad that... And he was just angry, always angry, hated his brother, and he died that way. And so... You know, it's a terrible thing to not have control over. And he caused problems. He was always generating problems in that far spread out country community. And that's sad, but that was Arnold. Proverbs chapter 19 and verse 11. The discretion of a man makes him slow to anger, and his glory is to overlook a transgression. The discretion of a man makes him slow to anger. And I would like to say that as I've gotten older, that I've learned how important it is to control this emotion. I don't do it as well as I should, and my family would be the first to attest to that. But I know that there are a lot of things that do not anger me as before, because I've learned that it's just not going to produce good things. Well, let's talk about self-control for just a few minutes in the book of Proverbs, because you're going to see that the two go hand in hand. The Bible has a lot to say about self-control, and it's also identified as temperance. And each individual is to administer self-restraint. In Proverbs chapter 25 and verse 28, look at how this is worded here. It gives the idea. The word self-control is not used. But whoever has no rule over his own spirit is like a city broken down without walls. And the key there is has no rule of his own spirit. Does not have the control. And so anger, when it's uncontrolled, what does it do? It bursts out. There is no wall of restraint. I had a preacher say, well, the other thing and the other idea is not only is that there's no walls to restrain it, but he says that a city that doesn't have walls is vulnerable and is going to be attacked in all fronts. And I thought, well, that's a good way to look at that as well. There's nothing good about this when there is no control. He who is slow to anger is better than the mighty, and he who rules his spirit than he who takes a city. Rules his spirit. How about Proverbs 29:11? He who is slow to anger is better than the mighty, and he who rules his spirit than... Whoops, didn't mean to have that twice. Proverbs 17 and verse 27. 17:27. He who has knowledge spares his words, and a man of understanding is as of a calm spirit. A man of understanding. The ESV there, Chad, I think says, whoever restrains his words. That's the idea. Restraining, holding them back. That's the idea of self-control. Look at these passages with me. Proverbs chapter 1 and in verse 10. Proverbs 1 and in verse 10. My son, if a sinner entice you, do not consent. How do you do that? You're enticed. There is something that's drawing you. How do you actually not consent? Well, that's the moment that you have to administer self-control. That's when you have to. I can't rule over your spirit. You can't rule over mine. You have to do that. And that is a learned thing. How about Proverbs 6, verse 20 to 25, which is what Adam read for us. Do not lust after her beauty. How do I carry out that command? It takes my very own self-restraint. The answer is self-control. And that's where the breakdown is, as we've talked before. Self becomes the problem. It's the reason we hear of deacons, elders, preachers, saints, doing what? Committing adultery. Why? They failed miserably in administering self-control. Look at Proverbs 4, verse 14 and 15. Proverbs 4, verse 14 and 15. Do not enter into the path of the wicked, but do not walk in the way of evil. And do not walk in the way of evil. Avoid it. Do not travel on it. Turn away from it. Pass on. I mean, how clear can that be? Avoid it. Do not travel on it. Turn away from it. Pass on. Keep moving. Don't stop. And so I have to avoid. I have to do this. I have to administer self-restraint. I have to rule my spirit. I have to control my vessel. Whether it be anger that starts to arise within me, I have to control that. I have to rule over that. That's my responsibility. I cannot just go around going, well, that's just who I am. No. When you're a Christian, you have to change. You have to conform to the image of Christ. It is not something that you can just get a pass and say, well, I'm going to use my get-out-of-jail card on this emotion. That doesn't work that way. How about Proverbs chapter 7, verse 24? Now, therefore, listen to me, my children. Pay attention to the words of my mouth. Do not let your heart turn aside to her ways. Do not stray into her paths. For she has cast down many wounded, and all who are slain by her were strong men. Her house is the way to hell, descending to the chambers of death. Do not let your heart, do not stray. You see that language? That's control. Proverbs chapter 23 and verse 31. Do not look on wine when it is red, when it sparkles in the cup, when it swirls around smoothly. Don't look at it. Don't do it. Restrain. Why do we know of and learn of many of our brethren struggling with alcohol? Why do they struggle? No self-control. No restraint. Well, self-control is a quality that separates us from the animals. And so instead of responding in an instinct, we plan, we evaluate our actions beforehand. And self-control is and must be learned. I have to rule my desires. I have to control my thoughts. I have to rule my body. I have to tame my tongue. I have to hold it. And when you are or I are yelling, or we're throwing a tantrum, or we're speeding in road rage, or we're eating a tub of ice cream, or we're being sexually promiscuous, what do we say? That person, he or she has lost it. That's what we say. They've lost it. And what do we mean? He or she, we say, is out of control. We say he or she is showing no restraint. Now, I want to, as we, this is put up here for us to recall. This is a lesson I brought some time ago on what are some keys to self-control. Knowing the Word of God, it's going to take exercise. It's going to take discipline to do that. It's going to take distracting ourselves. You remember the marshmallow study? That wasn't all that long ago. And avoid the way of temptation. Pass on. Don't travel. Don't turn. Don't go. Stay away. Stay far away. And we need to make sure that we adhere to this teaching. Just a couple more passages. Acts chapter 24. Do you realize that when Paul was reasoning with Felix, it says in verse 25, he reasoned about righteousness, self-control, and judgment to come. Do you remember how that made Felix scaredy? It scaredy. Because basically, if you break that down, Felix, you have to live according to the Word of God. Felix, you're going to have to control yourself to do that. Because Felix, you're going to be held accountable in the day of judgment. And it scared him. And rightfully so. Now, when you're a child, guess what? Mom and dad say, be back at this time. You can't go there. And they control you. When you're a child, they control you. They determine what time you're going to bed. But when you become a man or a woman, what is the difference? You become responsible for yourself. And the word self poses one of our greatest challenges because I must oversee myself. Well, let's see here. Nope, I don't have it. Look at one passage with me, and we'll close. 2 Timothy chapter 1 and verse 7. 2 Timothy chapter 1 and verse 7. For God has not given us a spirit of fear, but of power and of love and of a sound mind. The word sound right there, the ESV doesn't, it translates that self-control, interestingly enough. And that's when you look at Greek dictionaries, it says that's how you define that word. You define it as self-control. And so, if you look at this verse, he says, of love and of a sound mind, self-control. Self-control. And so we have to learn to develop good habits. And so we need to recognize the dangers of anger and the importance of self-control. And if you put that into the subject of sexual sins, alcohol, whatever the subject, you're going to see that the Proverbs is talking about things that are very helpful to you and I. Well, as we close, if you're not a child of God, I want you to think for a moment the fact that Paul reasoned with Felix about judgment to come, because there is a day of judgment coming. And the truth is, we don't know when that day is going to come. It may come tonight. It's going to come like a woman who's about to have a child or as a thief in the middle of the night when we're not expecting it, so we need to be ready. But if you haven't obeyed the gospel, you're not ready. You're not ready for the Lord's return. But you can do something about that. Now's a good occasion, and it's very convenient because things are ready. If you want to confess your belief in Christ and be baptized to wash your sins away, we stand ready to help you. If you're a child of God and there are things that are amiss, you need prayers, we'd be happy to help you any way we can as together we stand and sing.